All right. This is the Happy House Hunters Group, newbie real estate investors, or even the ins and outs of opening a short-term rental or a midterm. So we talk about commercial, long-term, short-term, midterm. We talk about all of it. So the questions pertain to just about everything that we're doing. So today I want to talk about the rental process, because we go through the six F's of real estate. So it's how to find it, then it's how to fund it, then you have to fix it, and then you're either going to flip it or you're going to fill it. And then finally, what is your freedom number? How many of those do you have to do to make your day job optional? So I am talking today all about how to fill it. And so I want to get started by asking the question, what are the horror stories that you've heard about being a landlord? So that's what we're going to talk about today. And the term landlord is used in all of the legal documents. Whenever you're doing a lease agreement, or you're talking, with banks, or you're talking, with attorneys, they're always talking about who is the landlord. But when you're marketing what you're doing, we like to say that you're a housing provider, because that's what you are. Landlords sometimes get a bad rap, but you are a housing provider. And folks that need houses need you as a housing provider. So that's what we're talking about today. So what horror stories have you heard? And I'll start. One of the ones that I hear all the time is I get calls, or my uncle owned real estate back in the day, and he got calls all hours of the night. So you get calls all hours of the night, or at the most inopportune time. So that's probably one of the biggest myths that I hear all the time, is I don't want to be a landlord because I don't want to get calls all the time. What are some other horror stories or concerns that you've heard? Elise, what about you? Have you heard, before you got into this, what was it that scared you the most about being a housing provider or a landlord or a landlady in our case?
I definitely had fears about definitely the calls in the middle of the night and not being able to handle what came up out of the calls. So if it was something that I had never heard of before, some
Okay,
kind of repair.
okay. Okay, so how to do the repair.
Correct.
Okay. All right, I'll do another one. Another one that I've heard is, oh, my cousin had rental properties and they never paid their rent, so the tenant is not paying. That's a big fear. So the tenant is not paying. What, and he finally sold them all, my cousin did, because he just got tired of chasing rent all the time. So the tenant not paying and chasing rent. So how about another one, Elise? So we've got
Let's see.
getting calls, how to do the repairs, tenant not paying. What's the fourth one?
Oh, that every tenant's gonna trash your house. Every time that you get a person, the house is getting destroyed. Ooh, I was
Okay.
scared.
Okay. So the tenants are going to trash my house. And your biggest fear in that is the cost factor. If they trash the house, you can't rent it again until you fix it or put it back together. And so
Right.
now what are you going to do if you don't have the funds to do that? Or how, that's going to cut into your profits, so to speak. And so that's a big one. I get that. Okay, how about, okay, I say no animals, no pets, and I find out that they all have dogs and cats, and this is a big one, and they try to hide it from me because they've signed a lease that says they're not going to have any pets. And so now we've got dogs and cats, or a combination of that, in the house. So that's a big one. What else?
That the city's out to get me.
Ah.
As soon as I get a property, there's going to be some person who's going to be checking every single thing that I do.
Okay. So the city is either out to get you or to get your money. Because they say, nope, you don't have a permit for that, or you have to have a license for this.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So what is the common thread that is running through all of these fears? I'm getting calls in the middle of the night. I might not know how to do the repair. Oh, I've got one. Let's do a seventh one before I go through this. The seventh one is I might not know how to do the repair, but I can't find a contractor.
Oof.
Or I can't find a trustworthy contractor.
Mm-hmm. Especially being a woman, too.
And I get it. And you wouldn't think in today's age that that makes a difference. But yes, it does. It makes a big difference. And so now if we go through the fears of, okay, I'm going to get calls in the middle of the night. I might not know how to do a repair when that call does come in. The tenant's not paying their rent. So now I'm having to chase their rent or late rent, either no rent or late rent. They're going to trash my house. They're going to have animals in there after they've signed a lease that says they're not going to have animals. The city is going to charge me all kinds of fees and licensing and inspection fees if I am a landlord or housing provider. And at the end of the day, I can't even find a trustworthy or knowledgeable contractor to even get the work done that I need to get done. So if you could solve all those things with one thing, what would the one thing be that you could solve all seven of those things? And it's going to be so simple, but you're going to be thinking all kinds of things other than what my answer is. What's the first thing that jumps in your mind? What would be helpful to you to have to solve those things? I'm getting calls. I don't have to do the repair. The tenant's not paying. They're paying late. They're trashing my house. They got animals. The city's charging me. I can't find a contractor. What's the one thing that would solve all seven of those things? You give up?
A property manager.
More money. Now, let me ask you this. If you were sitting on $100,000 in your bank account, liquid, that was not part of your retirement. It was not money that you had dog-eared for some other bill or for some other thing that you needed to purchase. And it was your reserve for your rentals. Would that make a difference in all seven of those things? Because you could hire a property management company if you had some cash in reserve. You could hire somebody to do the repairs. You could pay top dollar and get the contractor, because what I know that maybe you don't know listening to this call is once you work with contractors, if you pay them quickly upfront with a little extra, guess what? The next time you call, they are right there because they know. Because they're just trying to make a living too. They're trying to feed their family. They've got bills too. And if they know that they're going to get paid the same day or like the next day, and they're not having to wait around and juggle funds around waiting for your check to come in, guess what? They're going to start eliminating those clients that's hard for them to work for. And they're going to move you closer to the top of their list so that when you call, they'll say, sure. And so more money takes care of the contractor issue, and it takes care of you not knowing how to do a repair. And even your tenants not paying or chasing the rent. If you had more money, you could turn that over to a property management company or a property. You could even hire somebody to work inside your company if that's something that stresses you out and you're like, I don't want to do that anymore. And if they trash the house, you've got the funds to flip it again. If they're animals do damages, you have the funds to flip it again. And if the city has inspections or all kinds of license fees, you've got the funds to take care of that. So all of those things can be solved by money. So now let's talk about the money point, because what happens? Oh, we've got Adrian on. Adrian, I'm going to let you come up if you would like. And so what happens when you're talking about the money point, having more money, is when you first get started, things are a little tight. And I get that. I was there when I first got started. I remember my very first investment was my salon building. And I had these gals all working for me, stylist and nail techs. And so anytime something would go wrong, you know, we'd get a leak in the faucet, the, you know, the toilet wasn't working, the screen door, the wind whipped the screen door, the whatever, the porch floor had a board that was starting to get rotted out. And so I was trying to manage all of that. And my utility bills were horrendous because running a salon, and just so some of you get the idea, I had a salon in Canal Winchester. I'm retired now, and it's an office building now. But at the time, at running it as a salon, I had 12 staff working for me. And my water bill was $800 a month because they all used water. They were hairstylists and nail techs. They were doing pedicures and shampoos and washing towels. And then I had tanning, so we were washing tanning towels. So we were using $800 worth of water a month. And so I also had a huge electric bill. Because it, you know, and also a gas bill in the winter, because we had 200 women a week that were coming in and out of there, opening and closing the door, along with all of the stuff that's going on. If you've ever been in a busy salon, you get it. And so we were just using a ton of utilities. And so with that said, I was really kind of strapped, even though the cash was coming in, the cash was going right back out. And that's the part that a lot of your tenants do not see. They just see the cash coming in. So they think if you own all of this real estate that, oh, she's wealthy. She's got all of these houses. Well, you look good on paper. You know, you could be very wealthy on paper because you buy at a lower amount when you get into the deal. And then over time, your properties will appreciate. So even though you're putting in repairs and keeping on top of all of that, and you're paying your property taxes and your insurance and all of that stuff, but you're still going to have some vacancies. You're still going to have some charges and some costs. You're still going to have property taxes. When all of that comes through, then it cuts into your cash flow. And oftentimes your rent is like right there. I mean, you're not really cash flowing on that unit and it looks good on paper, but you can't pay your bills with your ledger sheet. And if the rent comes in at $1,000 and it costs you $1,000 to hold that property, then you're not really cash flowing. And so sometimes if you have more than one property, or like me have several, sometimes you have to do a review. And don't be afraid if you're constantly stressed and you can't get ahead of the cash flow, don't be afraid to sell something. And I guess that's probably my lesson on filling, because you're thinking, well, if I could just charge more rent, or if I could just hold this unit for another 5 years and keep raising the rent. And you can do all those strategies, but you have to, at the end of the day, you have to make sure that you personally are liquid, that you can survive this. Because it goes back to where, you know, if you win the battle but lose the war, what's the point? So if you can hang on long enough, but you end up, you know, filing a bankruptcy because you had some great big loss in your life and you didn't have the funds to handle it, then what good is hanging on by your fingernails trying to squeak through? So there's a happy medium. And that's what I want to talk about today, is that happy medium. And how do you find the happy medium? And I'm going to give you a real life example, and I'm not going to name names because I love these tenants. They're the sweetest folks, and they bought a house. But when we got into the house, and I was just telling Elise that I've been crazy busy with this rehab, when we got back into that house after they moved out, we found that not only did they have like one dog, they had several, I'm sure, because the entire house smelled. That was the first thing. As soon as I opened the door, it smelled so bad when I walked in there. Now, understand that folks, and I have to give you a couple of examples here. The first example is when I was doing nails for a living, a nail tech. I don't know if any of you have walked into a nail salon, but man, oh man, that acrylic and acetone, it's strong, and it about knocks your nose off. But I was in that environment every day for 12 hours a day. And guess what? I didn't smell it. I didn't smell it anymore. I got immune to it because I was in it every day. I did not smell it at all. But your brain is a funny thing. So if I would go to a hair and nail show at a hotel somewhere where they were doing a big expo, and they were demonstrating products, I could smell it because my brain wasn't expecting to smell it there. But when I walked into my salon, I didn't smell it because my brain had gotten accustomed that this is what this building smells like. And people would say, oh my gosh, this makes my eyes water. How can you stand to be in here? And I'm like, what are you talking about? Because I didn't smell it at all. So with that example, I want you to know, folks that have animals in their house, they literally do not smell it. And when they say, my house doesn't smell bad, they truly believe that. And it's like a smoker, somebody that's a smoker, they're like, well, you can't smell smoke on me. And I'm like, oh yeah, I can, because I'm not a smoker. So as soon as I get even slightly close to them, I can smell the smoke on their clothes. And I can tell that that person is a smoker. I run a guest house in my home. We do not allow any smoking inside our home. We set up an actual smoking area for our guests because we know if they're a smoker, they're going to smoke. So we give them an area to smoke. I can tell when I go in after they check out, I can tell they were a smoker just from the smell on the sheets where they had slept in the bed, even if they never smoked in my house. I can still smell it on the sheets. So my point in that is that everything is relative. And so because you're a housing provider, these are going to be your issues. And again, like I said, when we first started the call, money heals a lot of wounds if you have the money. And so I guess that's the first thing I want to say is get yourself a reserve, start putting back some funds. And even if you don't have a reserve yet, create one, because it will take the stress. It'll take the edge off of that stress. Am I right, Elise? If you had some cash in the bank, you're not near as stressed as when you don't have any cash in the bank.
Correct.
Yeah. So get some cash in the bank. And even if you have to go get a job and punch a time clock for a while, that's okay. But get yourself a reserve. Get yourself a reserve so that you're not stressing over these things, because they will happen. Now, some things that I learned, and I'll go back to my story. So I walk into this house and the dog smell is so strong that, I mean, it's gagging strong. And every carpet has stains. And of course, you know, the tenant, she had the carpets steam cleaned, thinking she's doing a good thing. And she gave it her best effort. I get that. And she even said, oh no, they're really good. You should have seen them before I had them cleaned. And I'm like, okay. But anyhow, and she's the sweetest thing. And I get that. And she really was thinking that the house wasn't bad, that it was ready to, you know, for me to rent it again. Well, I knew that there's no way I could put another tenant in there, especially one that didn't have animals, because there was no way. So the more we got our contractors in there and the more we started looking at what we needed to do to get this house ready to rent, it finally came to the conclusion with, you know, the whole, and again, I encourage you to have your advisory board. I pulled my advisory board together, which is several contractors and painters, and I've got several folks on my advisory board that do this stuff for a living. And they all were like, you're going to have to pull all your floor coverings out, because that's what's holding the smell, is all the carpet and the padding. Now, she and the tenant and her husband, they had even installed a couple of rooms of new carpet out of their own pocket over the years. They were there for 7 years, and 2 to 4 years ago, they did get a couple of rooms of new carpet that they had invested in as well. And but they had paid for a thicker padding under the carpet. So it felt like in its day, it would have been upscale carpeting, but it was too bad I couldn't save it, because not only were there stains that wouldn't come out, there were some areas where the dog had dug, you know, along the edge and had ripped up the carpet. And then of course there was a couple of rooms that had the original carpet and they were totally shredded by the dogs. And then I had a couple of rooms with hardwood floors, and the dogs had peed in the room with the hardwood floors, and it had turned the varnish black wherever the pee stain was. The varnish turned black. So I couldn't save my hardwood floors, because even sanding them down, the pee stain had soaked through the hardwood. I would have had to have removed all the hardwood. So the determination is that we would pull all of the floor coverings out down to the hardwood or plywood, whatever the subfloor was. And then we would just, we would treat it. We scrape, because then even after we pulled the carpet out, there was dog feces actually on the subfloor where I, and we think probably where she had it steam cleaned, it actually washed some of it down through. So now it's sitting on the actual subfloor. So at this point, we had to scrape all the subfloors, and we did that. Then we came in and we bleached all the subfloors, and some of the wall area around the baseboards were all urine stained. So we bleached the entire house, and we're talking a huge house. This is a big 4-bedroom, 3-story house. So we bleached all the walls and trim and subfloors, and then we came back and it still bled through after we scraped. And so then we came back and we sanded all of the floors, the plywood and the hardwoods. We sanded just to get the surface stain off, because we didn't want to put new floor coverings and it then wick up through our new carpet. So then we sanded all of the stain as much as we could without damaging the subfloors. We're trying to not replace the subfloors, because that's another $20,000. And then we came in and we layered it with Kills paint. So if you've not used Kills, definitely put that on your checklist. It's an oil base that will encapsulate all of those odors and stains, hopefully. And it still bled through and we still could smell it. And not as strong, but we still could smell it. And but it smelled now like paint and dogs mixed together, which is not a fun scent either. And so then we came back and we did, I think, a total of 4 layers of Kills throughout the entire house. So, and we threw away everything. We threw away bathroom vanities. We threw away bathtubs. We threw away surrounds. We threw away cabinets. We basically gutted the house down to the drywall and the subfloors. So now, of course, since we pulled all of the vanities out, you guys are going to love this. I'm going to make you guys feel better about your deals. So once we pulled all of the vanities out, or once we were ready to pull the vanities out, we had to turn the water off, of course, because we're going to pull everything out that's connected to the plumbing. And have you ever turned water on or off at the main and it gives a little clunk because of the water pressure? Kind of, you know, does everybody know what I'm talking about? That little clunk when you, well, all of a sudden, my front yard was soaking wet. And so Mark starts digging. He digs down about 3 feet, and we have a main water line break. Has nothing to do with the tenant. It has to do with the fact that it was an older line, and we were turning the water on and off because we were pulling out vanities. And so thank goodness it happened on our watch and not when we have somebody in there. And so at the end of the day, we now have a water main break to repair. So, and of course it's the galvanized line. And I was so happy to get this house because when I first bought it, because it sits back from the street. So it's a beautiful front yard and there's a beautiful view and all those things. But now it means, because it's a galvanized pipe and the city says you can't repair those, you have to replace them. We now have to replace the line through the entire front yard, clear from the house to the street, which is a longer line than usual. So yeah, so it's coming back to bite me, that beautiful yard. So anyway, you get the point. Now, that has nothing to do with the tenant. You know, they lived there and the water was fine. They did have a leak in the bathroom upstairs that they didn't tell us about, and it has leaked down through the kitchen ceiling. So a section of the ceiling has to be replaced. And then they did take all of my appliances out and left me with some older, used, not real nice appliances. So we're putting all new appliances in. So anyhow, this house is going to look brand new when we're done. To save money, because I've spent so much on the remediation of the smell and the stains in the house, we decided to come back after all of that Kills. We decided to come back and spray paint the entire house an off-white. That way we're not paying our painters to trim, because this, again, this is a big house. This is a big 4-bedroom house, mother-in-law suite, 2 bathrooms, full basement, you know, big house. So we didn't want to spend even more money paying our painters to trim everything out. So we're spraying everything white. We're spraying the doors, the trim, the walls, the ceiling, everything's an off-white color. I didn't think I was going to like it. I thought, oh, this is going to look very sterile, like a hospital. You know, I didn't think I'd like it. But I think by the time I trim out the cupboards and like the mantle on the fireplace and the banister that goes upstairs, I'm going to use a color called peppercorn. which is it's kind of a slate gray with a hint of a brownish, just a hint of a brown in it. And it looks really nice with my carpet and my floor coverings. So I think once I trim it out and once we get all the new floor coverings in, and then we're going to add stainless steel appliances, I think it'll be pretty beautiful. And we're going to do all mini blinds in the windows, and it'll look like a new house inside when we're done. Now at the end of the day, I'm spending about $25,000 to rehab this house. So now you're saying, oh my goodness. I don't have $25,000. I hope that doesn't happen to me. How in the world am I going to do a house for $25,000? Now, I get that, which is why you have to have a reserve. Because sooner or later, something like this could very well happen, and you're kind of dead in the water if you don't have the funds to keep moving. So here's what I want to say. I bought this house as it was going into foreclosure, maybe I'd have to go look at my paperwork, but I'm going to say maybe 12 years ago, maybe not, maybe 10. And this couple has been there for 7. So when you take the rent, even though their rent was pretty low when they first moved in 7 years ago, and it was still under market when they moved out. So I was excited thinking I could get in there and maybe just update a couple floor coverings and raise the rent up to market and I'm good to go. But when I realized the extensive damage and that I had to gut the house down to the drywall and down to the subfloor, and I realized what it's going to cost. And again, we just had to do so much because we had to bleach and we had to scrape and we had to clean and we had, you know, and then we painted 4 layers. And by the time I added all of that up, and then we had to dispose of everything. You know, I had a clean out company that charged me $1,300 just to pull the carpet floor coverings out and haul them away. And so by the time you add all of that up, and you realize that the house is going to look really great when you're done, then you have to stop and ask yourself, is this to my best interest? And so when I look at what I paid for the house, I look at the money I collected, even with under market rents, I'm still ahead spending the $24,000. Does that make sense? So it might hurt right now because this house isn't going to cash flow because of all of my expenses. But I made money on this house from the time I bought it until now. If I just look at the big picture, if I just say, here's what I paid for the house, here's the rent that I collected, add that together, subtract out my expenses, and I'm still ahead. It's not a bad deal. And I teach all the time in this class that it's all about good, better, and best. There are good deals, there are better deals, and there are the best deals. Now, I kind of got pulled into the deal buying this house because a realtor friend of mine, she was like, hey, this house is really a great price and it's a beautiful home and it's a big, you know, 3-story and no, you can't buy this kind of a house for this kind of money in this neighborhood. She said, it's a great deal. Well, it was. But you have to remember, and I teach this in the finding section of this course, when you're going to buy and hold property, you have to ask yourself, who is the most likely that's going to be a long-term renter? Well, it's going to be someone that falls in the middle. If you have your rent and it's a big 3-story, 4-bedroom house like this one, then a couple of things you have to consider. Number one, your rent is going to have to be pretty high to offset your cost. And I have to go right to the top of the market to offset my $24,000 I just put in it, plus my original note, plus the property taxes have gone up, plus the insurance has gone up, plus the holding cost that I have for the 2 or 3 months that I'm going to be flipping this house. So at the end of the day, I have to go to the top edge of the market for that size of a house. And here's what I want to tell you. Folks that can afford that rent can also afford to buy. So that size of a house, you're more than likely going to have a revolving door there because every time you raise the rent, they're going to go, I could buy a house for what I'm renting this one for. Maybe I should just go buy one. And that's exactly what my tenants did. They bought a house. And I'm excited for them. I'm glad they bought a house. But what happens now is I now had to put this house back together and my next tenant might only stay a year or two, and then I'll have to flip it again. And then the next tenant might stay a year or two, and then I have to flip it again. And so oftentimes You have to really find your sweet spot. And my sweet spot for rentals is 1 and 2 bedrooms. They come with 1 or 2 people, maybe a baby, maybe not. A 2-bedroom, they might say, oh, we're a young couple and we have this 2-year-old. So maybe they'll come with a baby, maybe not. But the point is those folks are at the stage in their lives where they're either younger couples wanting a place on their of their own for the first or second time. Maybe they're starting their family for the first time, and they could stay there for several years because they don't have the funds yet. They're not supervisors on their jobs. They're not the big corporate people on their jobs. They're the ones that they're the worker bees. You know, they work at Applebee's in the kitchen, or they work in healthcare, but they go to work every day and they're not making huge money. So they might stay with you for years before they're really ready, before they can save up to even buy a house. And so they're very content to rent. And so I look for those types of houses. I love the 1-bedrooms because they usually come with just a single person. You know, they're like, nope, it's just me. I just need a 1-bedroom. I'm good. And I have tenants in my 1-bedrooms that have been there for years, literally years. And I never hear a peep out of them. Occasionally they might go, hey, my faucet's dripping. Think you can send somebody over to fix it? I'm like, oh yeah, I can do that. So you see my point. And then when they do move out, even if I have to replace the entire house of carpet, I'm talking maybe 3 rooms. I'm not talking 9 rooms like this big house that I have right now. I'm talking maybe 3 rooms. I'm talking maybe they didn't even use, you know, the second bedroom in a 2-bedroom. Maybe they just had a desk in there. They didn't have any kids. It was just them. And so there's not the wear and tear. The house does not get beat up. But this house, when this couple moved in, it was the mom and the dad and 4 minors, 4 kids. And of course, it ended up with all the dogs. So this house, just normal wear and tear, got beat up in 7 years. I mean, you can imagine, you know, the kids running in and out and their friends are there and the dogs are there and, you know, and they lived in that house. So, every surface had to be touched. So all of a sudden, instead of a $1,000 flip, it's a $24,000 flip. So you get my point. So sometimes you have to just look at your portfolio and you have to say, what is my sweet spot? You know, what properties are most successful? And they're not necessarily the biggest ones, but what properties are the most successful? And so maybe, just maybe, you need to liquidate the ones that are not. And that's okay. I think sometimes when you're new in this business, you start to hang on to where, oh, I worked really hard to make this deal happen. And so I don't want to sell it because I worked hard to get it. And I went through a little bit of that with this house. But here's what I realized at the end of the day. And hopefully I can inspire you to rise above and relax into this business. And treat it like a business. Don't get emotionally connected to these properties because you're building wealth, you're building retirement income, you're building freedom to where you don't have to punch a time clock. You are a housing provider. You're bringing value to your community. You're bringing good quality, clean housing, and you have to pay and spend whatever it takes for you to provide that good quality, clean housing. And so that's why you need to have the reserve. And that's why it's okay if a house like the one I'm talking about no longer fits your sweet spot. Because here's what I know about this house. When I'm all done with it, it's going to look beautiful. But you know what's going to happen as soon as I rent it? It's going to come with a village. And here's why. I thought at first, oh, I'm just going to go in and update a couple of rooms of carpet and re-rent it until I got in there, of course. And of course, I've described that to you. But originally, when I thought I was going to be able to just flip it in a couple of weeks and get it back out there and rent it again, I put it out on Craigslist, Zillow, and Marketplace. I had 3,453 clicks on my ad. I had 30 applications immediately came through the door. 30 different families wanted that house. When I started through the stack of applications, all of them came with a village. Well, yours is the biggest house that we can find because everything else is only a 2 or 3 bedroom and yours is a 4. Plus you've got that third story attic and that attic room could be a bedroom. So that's 5. And then you got a big full basement. We could put a bedroom down there. So that could be 6. And so we've got 4 kids, the in-laws, the outlaws, the dogs, the cats, the bird, you know, the 2 adults. Oh, and then my brother, you know, he and his wife are having trouble. So my brother's going to stay with us for a while. And next thing you know, I've got 10 people that want to rent that house. A family of 10. Well, what do you think happens to my $24,000 that I just put into that house? The brand new carpet, the brand new stainless steel appliances, the brand new countertops, the brand new tubs, the brand new surrounds, the brand new toilets, the brand new vanities, the brand new plumbing, the brand new. What do you think after 10 people with the birds and the cats and the dogs live there for a year and then go, oh, we found a house a little cheaper, we're moving, thanks. What do you think that house is going to look like in 12 months? Probably, I can guarantee it won't look like it's going to look as soon as I get done with it, but probably not good, because that's a lot of people. And just normal wear and tear is probably more than what I want to have to replace every 12 months financially. Because now, every time I spend money on that house, my cash flow gets cut into, my profit gets cut into. So at the end of the day, I have to ask myself, is this property one that I want to buy and hold, or is this property one that I want to flip? And there's nothing wrong with what I like to call a long flip. I've had this property for 10 years. It's served me well from what I paid for it to what it's appreciated to if I put it on the market. Even if I consider all the rents I've collected versus what I'm spending, at the end of the day, this house is probably worth more to me to put on the market than it is to hold it as a rental. And what it'll do is it'll do 2 things. Number one is it'll give me some liquidity in a bank account on once, because there could be some capital gains. You have to consider all this. There could be some capital gains. There is the possibility, if I wanted to do a 1031 exchange, to buy something else, that I could. But at the end of the day, I have to see what kind of cash I'm going to end up with out of this. And I'll do the numbers to make sure, and then determine what I'm going to put it on the market for. But at the end of the day, it'll give me that buffer that I need. So now I can maybe buy a couple of more 2 bedrooms, or I could buy maybe a 4-plex that has 4 1-bedrooms in it. You see where I'm going with this? Because those are my sweet spots. See, those are the folks that don't beat the house up as much because there's only 1 person or 2 people in there. They're both working. They're never home. They don't have any animals. And that flip is a lot smaller and easier to afford than this big 3-story, 9-room house. And so at the end of the day, when the second point there is that the house is never going to look better than what it's going to look the day I finish all of the new stuff. It's never going to look that good again until I flip it again, maybe a year or two down the road, but it's never going to look that good in the next few weeks. So it's not like I can put a renter in there and then say, well, if it doesn't cash flow, maybe I'll sell it in a couple of months. It's not going to look that good just in a couple of months, because it's going to have brand new everything in that house. We stripped it clear down to the drywall, clear down to the subfloors. It's got a new water line. I'm putting a new roof on the porch. The top end was okay, but the porch needed replaced. I'm putting a new roof on the porch, a new water line in there, all new interior. That house will not look any better than it will when I finish it. So I had to make a tough decision, because I did work kind of hard to build up all these properties. And I'm like, oh, do I really want to sell one? But if you don't get emotionally connected and you can look at the 30,000 foot view and not get down in the weeds and just look at the numbers, it makes sense for me to put this one on the market and to possibly purchase something else that's more in my sweet spot. So don't be afraid to reevaluate some of your choices, because things change. And there's always that good, better, and best. So things change, and don't be afraid. So questions. Elise, you've been patiently listening to my whole sordid story. And we started off by talking about all of our fears. And do you see now where if you had that cushion, that account, that those funds, that a lot of the stress would be gone because you're like, I can handle that. And what kind of questions come to mind?
Yeah. Thank you for all the information. I think it's always helpful to kind of even know that someone with as many investments as yourself will still feel that same way. Like, because that kind of the commitment to being a investor is not always the easiest. The commitment to being an entrepreneur is not always the easiest. It's like we talk about, it's like choosing your heart. I don't have any questions, but I can really relate to what you were saying. Like, you know, it's not going to look as good as you do, as it does, like right when you get done with it. So being able to say, you know what, that 30,000 foot view is like, no, it's just kind of time to move on and find something that will suit me better in the long run, you know, because mm-hmm. I can care about the investment and know that the next best thing for the investment might not be with me. So definitely relatable.
Now, I do want to mention, too, that it makes a difference as to where the investor is in their life. If I were younger and I thought, OK, let's say I don't want to spend the $24,000. Let me go just get a second line of credit on this house because it's got the equity. Let's say I'm going to pull $24,000 out so that I can put it back together and I'm going to continue to rent it. If I were in my 30s and I had a 20 year or 30 year span before I was ready to retire, and I didn't really need that house to cash flow. So whatever my first mortgage is, my second line of credit is, my property taxes and my insurance, if my rent just covered that and I were breaking even, it would not be a bad deal because the house would continue to appreciate, the rents would continue to go up. And even if I had to flip it every couple of years and put it back together again, it still would not be a bad investment. And so another piece of the pie for me is because Mark and I are at our retirement age, we don't want to wait 20 or 30 years for that house to cash flow a sizable amount. And again, I'm not talking, oh, hey, it cash flows $100. There are those out there that say, well, if you need more money, just pile it on. And if you've got 70 properties and they all cash flow $100, you know, then you've got cash coming in. But we're at the age where we don't want more responsibility for less cash per door. We want less responsibility with more cash per door. So we're wanting to pay off some of these notes, not take on an additional line of credit to do that big of a rehab. And because how many folks have $24,000 that they're like, oh yeah, I'll write a check for that. Yeah, we'll just split that. You're going to have to check out your bank accounts and go, okay, I got to buy appliances. I have to buy all of the vanities. I have to buy the tubs, the surrounds, the carpet, the clean out, you know, and after a while that adds up rather quickly. And so for us, that was another piece of the decision is this house is not a bad buy by any stretch of the imagination. It just doesn't fit our financial goals at this stage of our lives.
Yeah.
So I'll say that to say this, we're going to have a house totally remodeled that's going to be out there on the market for any of you younger investors that don't need it to cash flow for a while. But I can't stress enough, this size of a house, and I've often said, well, if we didn't live in the house that we're living in, that would be the house I would pick. Because it's beautiful. It's got the front yard. You walk out, you're looking at Mount Pleasant. It's on the east side of Lancaster. It's close to shopping. It's really the street is immaculate. Everybody keeps their properties really nice. And so I often said, if I had to pick a house to live in, one of my rentals, that would be the one. And so it was a little bittersweet, you know, thinking, well, maybe it's time for me to sell this one. But it still makes sense for me to let this one go because of the lack of cash flow for the number of years that it would take. Unless I decided to sell something else and pay that off, see, then that one would cash flow. But even then, if I'm not going to live in it, anybody I rent it to, it's going to come, like my phrase is, it's going to come with the village. And that's just not my sweet spot for rentals. And it isn't anybody's sweet spot for rentals unless you're in a high rent area and you're putting, you know, a doctor's family in there or an attorney's family in there or something like that. But when in Lancaster, because Lancaster is a big rental community, you know, and everybody feels that they can afford that house because, well, my brother's going to pay some and my mom's going to live with us and she's going to pay some. And then my husband and I are both working and we're going to pay some. And then my adult son is going to live with us and he's going to pay some. And after a while you're thinking, wow. So anyway, back to you, Elise. Did you have any thoughts or questions as far as your experience so far in rentals? What is some of your biggest hurdles that you've had to overcome just being a housing provider?
Absolutely. Yeah, biggest hurdles would definitely be, at least when I was moving in. So for those who don't know me, I am house hacking a duplex. So I live in one side and I rent the other out. When I moved, when I purchased the property, it had tenants on both sides. The tenant in the side that I now currently reside in was a hoarder and didn't like that she had to move. And, you know, that was one of the things that I had to deal with very early in there. And I've never, ever, ever seen malice in someone's heart to where they leave raw chicken in the dining room and turn the heat up to 80. Yeah, you know, like, and not to scare anyone out of it, because like there are just different experiences in what you have to do. But now I have great tenants on the other side. I like, they respect the home, and it's a 2-bedroom, 1.5 bath with a single car garage and a huge backyard that I just got fenced in. So kind of to Kathy's point, it's like, I didn't really have the money laying around to be able to take care of the fence. And mm-hmm. it was only, you know, we say only $3,000, but mm-hmm. kind of having the game plan of like, well, you know, this is going to up the property value, the after repair value for me. And then now being able to get a HELOC, so a line mm-hmm. of credit on my house to be able to access equity from me taking care of this fence before they get here and do an appraisal. You know, it made a smart move for me to be able to figure it out. And I stared at that bank account, but I said, in the long run, this is mm-hmm. paying off for me. So yeah.
And I get it, because once I put this house on the market, which I've made the decision, I wrestled with it for a couple of weeks, but I made the decision to put this house on the market. The cash that I'm going to get it's more than I paid, way more right. than I paid for the house. So I can't complain. It's been a good investment for me. It's been a great little bank account for me. It grew faster than any bank account that if I would have put the cash in the bank that I paid for that house, it would not have grown to what I'm going to get out of the house by selling the house. So it's been an amazing savings account for me over the last 10 right. years. But right. you have to back up and look at the big picture.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Don't get stuck down in the weeds, or else every time you have to replace a faucet, you're miserable because you had to spend $150. So yeah. So you got to look at the big picture. If you're going to be an investor, you have to look at the big picture, but you have to also have a way to tap into some of those reserves, and your HELOC is a perfect solution. And that's a perfect solution for me. I could tap in with the HELOC on this particular house, because once I sell it, see, I'll have the funds to pay all that off and still have cash in the bank.
Just for a second there, it might have just been me. After you said you could tap into your HELOC, I couldn't hear you. So I'm okay. Unsure if anyone else could hear you.
Yep, I may have froze there for a minute.
There you are. Okay.
Okay. So if I tap into the HELOC, I can on this house, I can make it really nice, which will drive the price even higher when I sell it. And then all of that money will come back to me at the sale for me to pay all that off. And I'll still have cash in the bank. So again, right. this has been a great savings account for me for the last 10 years.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So it's really a good buy. Again, there's only good, better, and best. And hopefully once I have those funds in the bank, I can then invest in something that's either better or best in my sweet spot. Does anyone else have any questions? Adrian, you've been patiently listening in. Do you have any questions for us?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. Welcome.
Okay. Well, thank you, thank you. Nothing at this time. Well, you're talking about selling your property. This sounds familiar with my story because when with the property I have now, every tenant that moved in like a couple months later, I would have to evict them, and each one I had to rehab the hot property, and financially that's gonna be a problem. So I was really considering selling it. Until I got the tenant I have now that's pretty good and able to pay the rent on time and such that, but if that didn't work either, I would seriously consider selling because it was my very first property and it's hard to not be emotional about it, but at the time when end up paying more expensive and get more profit off it, something has to give. But I'm grateful that that wasn't the case, but. Just hearing your story just reminds me of my situation.
Yeah, and you do have to kind of look at the big picture. So one of the things that one of the questions I had to ask myself is if I sell this property, is there other properties that I can buy with the proceeds? Or does it take me out of the game? And it does not take me out of the game because I should get enough out of my equity, even after paying off the first note, the mortgage, and paying off the HELOC for the rehab. And paying for the property taxes and insurance for the couple of months that I might be in the middle of getting a deal closing there. Even after all of my expenses, I'll still have enough cash that I can turn around and invest it again. There's still properties out there that I can buy for my cash that I'm going to have at the end of this sell. And that's what you have to ask yourself. You have to say, if I sell this house, does it take me out of the game? Does it make it to where I don't have enough cash to buy something else that's in my sweet spot? Because if it takes you out of the game, it may not be the best time to sell. Because if you've got a tenant that's, even if you're just breaking even, your tenant is buying you a house, and that's not a bad deal. That's not a bad deal if your tenant is buying you a house. Because there's very few houses out there in sometimes those price range. So I would do the research and see if I sold it, what might I expect to get out of it? And is that enough to buy something else to keep me in the game? Does that make sense?
Yes.
And at least the same for you. You know, your house would sell in a heartbeat. You know,
Oh, yeah.
beautiful duplex, and it would sell in a heartbeat. But could you buy something else for what you would get out of it? Could you stay
Absolutely.
in the game? And you may not, because you got such a great price on that one when you got in it. You now have it up to where you want it to be, how you want it to look, and you've got a great tenant, and you've got some cash flow out of it, and you're able to pull some money out on a HELOC, and it could be that the best thing for you. And again, only you guys can decide this for yourselves along with your own financial planners, but it could be that you couldn't do any better than that if you sold it and had the cash. Could you do any better than what you're doing right now? And I guess that's probably the question to ask yourself is, could I do any better than what I'm doing now? And that is what made me decide to put this big three-story house on the market, because I go, yeah, I could buy a four plex with four one bedrooms for what I'm going to get out of this house. So yeah, I could do better than what I'm doing now. And so
Right.
that was the deciding factor for me. So I guess that at the end of the day, that's the question you have to ask yourself, is if I sold it, could I do any better with the money I got out of it? And I'm not sure you could, Elise. And I'm really not sure Adrian could, because I know what he paid for his and what it's worth today. But even with the profit, once he paid off the note, Adrian, I'm not sure that you could buy something and pay cash with the profit. You might. You'd have to see what you think it would bring. Do your comps and see what houses like that are bringing. We just did our scholarship award yesterday, and one of the couples that the girl, Shay, that got the scholarship, she and her husband just flipped a house north of Adrian's neighborhood, but somewhat in that same neighborhood. And I didn't ask her what it sold for, but she said it went into highest and best within 3 days. They had so many offers that they called highest and best within 3 days. And I don't know what she ended up closing for. I forgot to ask her that question. So there are still some deals out there. So it could be, you know, that you could clear enough on that one, Adrian, that you could buy something else that would be better. And again, the only reason to sell is if there's a better option than the one you have. That's the only reason to sell. Does that make sense? Adrian, yeah, does definitely. That make sense?
Yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah, so the first step would be to do comps. If you're thinking, oh, I hate this, I don't want to do this anymore, is check out the comps and then see if there is a better deal than the deal you're in. And if not, then I would stay with the deal you're in until there is a better deal, until you appreciate enough and maybe prices come down to where all of a sudden you could buy something with the cash. Mm-hmm. Or get a better interest rate. I mean, it's all kinds of things. I think, Adrian, you've got an amazing interest rate, if I recall correctly. And Elise, I think you do too, because I think both of you got in when interest was down.
Yeah.
It was beautiful.
Yeah. Now, there's another point to mine. This big three-story house that I'm talking about, I took out a mortgage and it was right at the cusp of when things were changing. And so they put me on an ARM. Does everybody know what an ARM is? An annual renewable, which means every like 2 to 5 years, depending on how the contract is written, the interest rates can go up to up to par, whatever current rates are. And my loan jumped from 5% to 9%.
Mm.
So all of a sudden that loan is now at 9% because I got in it a little bit less thinking, oh, interest is going to be fine for a while. Well, guess what? Interest has gone up now. And so my loan is now jumped up from 5 to 9. So it makes a big difference now in my cash flow because now my monthly payment's higher. Then if I get the HELOC is now at prime rate. So now I'm borrowing money at higher interest just to keep this house. Yeah. Just to keep it cash flowing. I still have to borrow money at higher interest rates. So that's why that cash flow gap has gotten really small in this house. Now, again, if I were in my 30s or 40s and had a good 20 years, you know, for a tenant to buy me a house, I'd be very content to keep it if I didn't need the cash. But because we're already retired and it's my only cash, that's my only income is off of my rental properties, then I want to do something that cash flows better. That's cheaper to flip.
And that makes sense.
This has been a great call. I hope I've brought some value and made you feel comfortable with what you're doing and gave you a little bit better idea of how to view rental properties, because it's when you look at folks that have the freestyle living and the cash flow, most of them have done it with real estate. And so I encourage you, since both of you are relatively new, to not get out of the game, but to just strategically look at your assets and just try and make each purchase a little better than the last one. Because you have to, and again, we were laughing the other day. CJ is a good friend of mine, and he's a very creative investor. And he made the comment the other day, and I had to laugh. He said, the only difference between a good deal and a bad deal is a few years. He said, if you could make a bad deal now, but in a few years, it'll be a good deal because that house will have appreciated, the rents will have gone up, the mortgage will have gone down. And he said, and what you thought was a bad deal in about 10 years turns into a good deal.
Mm-hmm.
So hang in there, my friends. You're well on your way. Any last comments or questions before we go? I want to say thanks for everybody tapping in. We've had Elise and Adrian and Sherry, and Christy had to jump off. She's multitasking, taking care of an elderly parent. So I think she had to jump off and take care of some things. So thank you so much for tapping in today. And the replay will be in the Academy if you want to go back and listen. And we'll see everyone next time.
See ya. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye, Kathy. Bye, Elise. Take care.
See ya, Adrian.